Good afternoon. My name is Reverend Dr. James Gibbs, and we are live here at BBS Radio, and I'm happy to be with you today. This is the National Society of Christian Educators Incorporated, and the title of our show is Solutions. Solutions. I'm happy that you have joined with me today. I know that all last week I had a number of persons out there who responded with emails, and I took the time to respond back, and I encouraged you to call in and join in the conversation. And I hope that you will call in today. I've received emails from all over the world, some from Russia, some from Sweden, and other places across the span of the globe. And also, there are some here in the States that have indicated to me that they would be calling in. But we're speaking to everyone on a worldwide platform. National Society of Christian Educators Incorporated is committed to equipping the people for the work of ministry throughout each community, wherever we may be working, by focusing on high-risk and troubled youth, focused on such areas, and we have five pillars that our organization stands upon. Drugs in the community, that's one pillar. Gangs and gang warfare, that's the second pillar. Teenage pregnancy is the third pillar. School campus violence is the fourth pillar, and homeless children is the fifth pillar. Our mission is to do whatever may be necessary or desirable to assist at-risk and troubled youth, to educate them through community-wide workshops and symposia, and we rely purely upon volunteerism. We call upon teachers in the public schools and also the private schools. We call upon university professors, pastors, local pastors, and local law enforcement. And whenever all of these components come together, they create a continuum of learning for our young people so that they may eventually achieve a place in our society as productive and fulfilled adults. We want to follow them, track them all the way from the time that they are young people into their teenage years, into their adolescent stages, 20 ages, 30 ages, 40 ages, what have you, until they have gone on through and finished college and will have become productive citizens. And hopefully they, too, will be able to look back one day and say, well, you know, I was there, and this particular foundation looked after me. And so you might be so inclined to start your own foundation in your community. We're making a lasting impression, positive impact on the quality of life, not only for inner-city youth, but for youth all over, by partnering with various foundations. We have already found a group of partners that have embraced us, that are supporting us, and we are grateful to them. One such organization is the Give $1 to Save One Child Foundation. And then we have the Black Male College Explorers Program of Florida A&M University, here in Tallahassee, Florida. We have Cornerstone Solutions, and they come out of East Point, Georgia. Ernest J. Lane's Men's Apparel, and they're based, I believe, out of Tallahassee. Promer Centers of Excellence, and Scopake Publishing, Incorporated. Creating a continuum of care with intervention programs and activities on multiple levels that are sustainable and measurable over time. What that means is that if someone raises the question, how do you know if it's working? Well, we can measure the level of success of these individuals over a period of time, and we can keep our hands on those who come under us for support. Now, that's who we are and essentially what we're all about. The ground rules are that, first of all, we will begin with an opening prayer, usually, followed by one of the topics that we will use as our basis for discussion. And so if you will be so kind as to bow your heads just for a moment, we come to this point when we acknowledge that there are powers greater than ours, and that there is a divine spirit that controls even the universe upon which we inhabit. And so we submit ourselves to the will of our God in Christ Jesus. Amen. Now, for the past, we're now in week 5. And this particular week, I do want to hear from you, so you can feel free to call in anytime. We will be happy to receive you. Let me find all of the necessary information that you're going to need. Someone was here at my desk, and it seems that they have already taken the liberty of straightening things out for me. So, if you'll give me just a moment, I will try to locate the necessary information for us. 888-627-0068 is our toll-free number. And we ask that you call in anytime, 888-627-0068. That's 6008. And we will be happy to speak with you. Our email is jimrgibbs@comcast.net. jimrgibbs@comcast.net. Our website, and we encourage you to join us. Our website is www.nsceinc.org. Once again, and that's in lowercase, www.nsceinc.org. Thank you so very much. And a number of you have already responded, as we mentioned. We encourage you to continue writing us. Okay, now, if you would be so kind as to call us in, we're talking about school campus violence. We've been talking about that now for the past, this is our fifth week, school campus violence. It started out as a relatively harmless topic for discussion. And the more we got involved in it, the more intense it became, the more real it becomes, until one day we look up and we see that we have a real discussion here. Most every college campus that we know of, sooner or later, will have some activity on board, and police will be there, and you'll see flashing lights, and so on and so forth. And you begin to think, how could it be that these things are happening on our small campus? Well, they are happening all over the world. So we had been addressing those persons who might want to call in and tell us in their own words how they would recommend that we take a bite out of this particular crime or this criminal activity that's taking place on our campuses. But remember that it's not just college campuses, it's also high schools, middle schools, elementary schools, it's daycare schools, and all sorts of things are happening wherever our children are. And so we need to keep a close watch out for our children. But now, last week, my wife raised the question, and I think it's a very important one. She raised the question of, suppose we're talking about the children themselves, because we got deep into the conversation, and somehow bullying came up. And I often reflect upon the workshop that we had on last month, on the 13th of last month. It would have been August the 13th on a Saturday. And we had two very, very important workshops there. And one was the importance of reading, which was conducted by a young lady who's a reading coach. And she made the discussion a very important one, and that's something that our kids need to fall in love with, is reading. When we learn how to read effectively, we can travel all over the world through our reading. And so we are grateful to her for that particular workshop. And then we had another workshop on bullying, the institution of bullying. It was conducted by a deputy sheriff from the Crime Prevention Unit from this particular Leon County Sheriff's Department in the Tallahassee community. And we were grateful to her for doing the kind of work that she does. She travels all over throughout the county doing bullying workshops. And I was just really, really impressed. I think everybody needs to know about that. But the thing that my wife had discussed was, what about those kids that are being bullied every day? Want to hear from you. We would be grateful if you would call us and tell us what's happening in your world so that we can see where you are and what you're going through. So we encourage you to call us, 888-627-6008. And that's all over. That's throughout all of North America. So it doesn't matter what state you're in, whether you're in California or the state of Maine or Florida or all points in between. You can use the same toll-free number, 888-627-6008, and let us hear from you. Now, let me just say that this is the fifth week that we have had these discussions, and so far no one has called in. And this is supposed to be a live talk show. But for some reason, we are not getting any responses, and this is most unusual. So I think what we're going to try to do is we're going to speak with management sometime shortly after this broadcast and find out another time that we could move to that would be more promising, a time that we could reach most people, because here we are living in the Eastern Standard Time Zone, and it's a quarter after six on a Saturday afternoon. And I think this is perhaps not a good time because people are out and about. For instance, we're having a football game this afternoon. Most people around here are at the game. There are other games across the state. I was watching one on television a while ago, Auburn and South Carolina. South Carolina is my undergraduate school. Graduated from there back in the 70s. Or was it the 60s, 70s? And so I'm grateful to my alma mater, the Gamecocks. And so I do want to continue watching the game. But we are here. And so I'm going to be talking to management to find out what would be the best time that we could come on the air the next time. We're sort of looking at the middle of the week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, perhaps, and trying to opt for a morning, midday kind of thing when most people are at home. Some people are at home. You've got some students that are at home. You've got a lot of people that that do a lot of work at home, such as internet work, that might have a radio down low, and they could always call in and talk to us. Plus, on Saturdays, as a pastor, I often have my church activities. We have ongoing district and conference functions. We had a funeral to go to last week, and just barely made it in here in time to get set up. So it's a very busy day for us. I think moving to a weekday middle of the day would perhaps be better. So this might very well be our last Saturday afternoon program, because no one is responding anyway, and we're losing money. We're not getting any kind of support. If someone wanted to give us support, what would they do? Well, first of all, they would go to our website, www.nsceinc.org. And when they tune in on the website, there would be this crimson background with a Statue of Liberty there. You know you're on the right track, National Society of Christian Educators. And there's a big button there that says contribution. You push that button, and it would carry you through to the PayPal, and it takes PayPal and MasterCard, I believe, and Discover and Visa and all, whatever you have. And there we would ask you to make a small donation to us. It doesn't matter whether it's a couple of dollars, $5, or $500. It's whatever you can afford, because we are covering a very broad base. And so $1 or $2 from each person who calls in would be significant enough that we can pay for this broadcast. And that's essentially what we hope to do here. I'm speaking to you live from my house in my pastoral office. And I'm sitting at a desk behind a computer, and it's quite comfortable here. And I look outside, and I see the weather is just absolutely gorgeous. And I would love to be out there. I feel like running. I feel that I could get out there and run up and down the streets right now. But since we're here bound, my obligation is to this listening audience. It has been good, but again, I haven't heard from anyone. So having not heard from you, I don't know if anyone is listening. So, however we deal with school violence, I'm going to leave that subject for right now. And for the remainder of this, probably this last hour, we're going to be talking about homeless children. I have an article in my book, and the title of my book is Responding to Crisis Situations, Confronting Today's African-American Youth. It's, it was published in August 2009 through eBook Time, LLC, out of Montgomery, Alabama. And it's a very well-written book, first edition. And if you are desirous of picking up one of those, you want to write down the ISBN number. That's sort of like the barcode thing. The ISBN number is 978-1-60862-082-1. Once again, the ISBN number is 978-1-60862-082-1. It's the first edition, published August 2009, eBook Time, LLC, and the mailing address is 6598 Pumpkin Road, Montgomery, Alabama, 36108. And the website to eBook Time is www.e-booktime, that's one word, booktime.com. The book is $12.95. It has roughly 185 pages in it. And I'm currently reading from page 66, and the topic here is children or childhood homelessness. And there's an article here that that I wanted to read to you. Homelessness is a major issue in the United States because it affects the economy. Many children do not have access to a stable education, and many homeless children and teenagers have been abandoned by their parents. Homelessness is a huge problem because every year many children become homeless. Most homeless children get sick twice as often as non-homeless children. And only 200,000 of the homeless children are part of the homeless family. 42% of the children that are part of homeless families are under the age of 6. 42% of the children that are part of homeless families are under the age of 6. Many homeless children have been abandoned by their families, which normally result in depression and suicide, which is terrible and is frowned upon in our society. Homelessness weakens the economy because less people are able to contribute toward making the economy more plentiful. Therefore, the economy is less plentiful, and a slow economy creates more homelessness because people lose their homes and they have to live on the streets. The economy cannot subsidize housing and shelter. And that is a problem because the homeless need somewhere to sleep and a roof over their heads. When people cannot afford rent or mortgages and are under the poverty level, they become homeless, even if they have a steady job. Now, that is wrong because no person who is trying to support themselves should be homeless. And the government needs to help those people. Homeless children do not normally get a good education. And when that happens, they will most likely end up living on the streets or in and out of shelters or on a friend's couch for the rest of their lives. But when their friends stop being charitable, they have to rely on shelters. But at shelters, there is not always room. The problem is transportation. So they don't bother to go. Or their parents don't particularly care about them going and getting an education. Without an education, our economy has less of a chance to end homelessness, and people who are already homeless have less of a chance of having a bright future. In conclusion, with all of our issues like homeless negativity affecting the economy, children not having access to a stable education, and many homeless children and childhood abandonment, the government must do something about the children and adults who are homeless in America, and I might add, all over the world. It negatively affects the economy when there are less people to contribute. Also, when the economy is down, more people become homeless. There is a lack of education, so it is harder for the children to grow up and become successful. And then this thing goes on and on and on. And so you then begin to understand why it is interesting and why it is necessary for us as a foundation to appeal to the world community for financial support. This is not for me, it's not for my wife, but it's for those people out there who cannot help themselves. It might be little children. And as we leave one topic of discussion and enter into another, all of them are in desperate need of financial support. Whether you're talking about gangs in the community, whether you're talking about drugs in the community, whether you're talking about school violence, whether you're talking about teenage pregnancy or homeless children, all of them need support. And you stand between the people and their support. Now we're gonna take a break for about a minute or so, and we'll be back with you just as expeditiously as possible.
BBS Radio. com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here. Information and knowledge. Bring humanity closer to truth. BBSRadio.com.
Okay, we're back, and we have been talking about homeless children. We have left the discussion of dealing with school violence, and it is critical because school violence is everywhere. We have left it, but we haven't completely left it. We'll come back to that. We'll touch on all of the five pillars. But right now we're focusing on, and the reason why we're focusing on these different pillars is to try to highlight the importance of them and to give statistics and information that sort of clues the listener in to its critical nature. There are a number of things that we may not know about homeless children, and I'm going to read some things from the book that I was able to do in my research. It mentions, as we talk about childhood homelessness, there is a lack of education. So it is harder for the children to grow up and become successful. The first adolescent population screened by the Community Mental Health Council was a summer recreational camp. A total of 433 boys and girls aged 13 to 16 completed victimization screening forms. Once again, it was called victimization screening forms. 31% of the boys and 39% of the girls had experienced the murder of a close friend or relative. Further questioning of the youth revealed that a large percentage had actually witnessed murders or other violent events. These results prompted the authors to develop a more sensitive and precise screening form to identify children who have directly witnessed or experienced violence. And I can attest to that because one of the workshops that I was able to conduct, it wasn't what I would consider as recently. It was a while back, but I had a room full of kids. It must have been 40, 50 kids. And I asked the question, how many of you in here have witnessed someone being beaten up or stabbed or murdered? Everybody in there held their hand up. I was astonished because I didn't come in contact with that until I was a grown man, practically a grown man. Plus, they didn't have that kind of activity up in the mountains of Western North Carolina. We just didn't have murders and stabbings and killings and things going on back in the 50s and 60s. That just did not happen. I didn't know about that until I was about 18, 19 years old and moved down to Miami. And when I moved to Miami, that's when all of the things that we're talking about came to fruition. The violent screening form that I talked about became an integral part of the community education workshop. Principals, school counselors, and teachers would contact this council, that is, of the Violence Screening Education Council, and request workshops on violence prevention for their students. The demographic makeup of the schools was listed in a local newspaper article, the Chicago Sun-Times, October the 20th, 1984. There were 265 high school subjects composed of 44% low-income families. The students participating in the class and survey were from co-ed health classes. School 2 had 92 high school participants in a school composed of 49% low-income families. They were also members of a co-ed health class. School 3, 25.1% low-income families, had 82 students from a self-contained transitional program for high school students at risk of dropping out. School 4 had 54 students from a high school that primarily served or serviced residents of Chicago. Housing authority developments, where the violent crime rate was 31.9% per 1,000. The school population was 56.9% low-income families. The workshop and survey participants were involved in the school book club. School 5 had 54 eighth grade participants and is located within a Chicago police district, cited as having the highest number of homicides and violent assailants in the city. School 6 had 312 participants. The survey was completed by all students in 5th through 8th grade. Students did not receive a violence prevention workshop, but the school was identified as having the highest number of in-school arrests of students for any Chicago public elementary or high school. School 7 had 172 participants from the African American history, from Afro-American history and low classes of a particular school instructor. Half, we're talking about 50.9%, the students in this school are from low-income families. As the school is located within the immediate vicinity of two public housing high-rise developments that have violent crime rates of 43.5% and 72% per 1,000 residents. The violent crime rates of the various public housing developments were listed in an article on the increasing rates of violent crime in Chicago housing developments, and that was posted in the Chicago Tribune, June 12, 1987. A short survey composed of 12 questions was distributed to students at the beginning of the classes or workshops. Students were informed of the presenter's desire to measure the number of students having experienced or witnessed various forms of violence. They were informed that their response would be anonymous and confidential. Names were not written on any of the surveys. Students also were told that they had the right to refuse to participate if they chose by simply not completing the survey. The exact number of non-participants is unknown, but very few students refused. The questions were read out loud to benefit those who might have had difficulty reading. Questions were not interpreted or discussed. Immediately upon completion, questionnaires were folded and collected by presenters. Here were the results. Gender differences. The surveys indicated that 75% of boys and 70% of girls surveyed had seen someone shot, stabbed, robbed, or killed. Of the 400 subjects who witnessed the shooting of another person, 45% were girls and 55% were boys. Of the 557 subjects witnessing robberies, listen to this, 52.6% were boys and 47% were girls. Fewer subjects, 384 witnessed stabbings, with 51% of the witnesses being boys and 48.5% girls. Of the 1,000 persons screened for witnessing murders, 236, that is 23%, had been witnesses, with 57% being boys and 43% girls. Now, I'm not going to go into any more of those gruesome statistics. I think that the point is well taken. I don't want to bore you with that, and it goes on to talk about, how many, but I'll go on to the conclusion. Although there has been previous research on African Americans victims and co-victims of violence and children in violence, very few studies have focused on the problems of African-American youth with violence and co-victimization. We have presented the results of a recent survey of elementary and high school children from several Chicago public schools and discussed the implications of our results. Recognizing the high rates of co-victimization in African-American youth We developed three recommendations by combining the results of our study with research of previous authors. These recommendations are: one is periodically screen children. The next one is identify at-risk children early for behavioral disorders and emotional disturbance and refer them for intervention and support. And then break the cycle of violence in schools through programmatic structure and education on violent prevention and conflict resolution. This was essentially what I talked about when a week or so ago I talked about my PAC program. The PAC being, what does the PAC mean?
Positive.
Adolescent Choices Training. Yeah, I've drawn a blank there. Positive Adolescent Choices Training. This is a program where we go into, initially you go in and sit down and you talk with the principal of the school or the counselors, coordinators, what have you, and we draw up a contract. You pay me so much money, or my organization so much money to come to your school X number of days for a half a year and 50-minute sessions. We'll come in there and we will sit down with your teachers, and the teachers they're the experts because they know their kids better than anybody else. They know the ones who have the most aggressive behavior. They know the ones who eat breakfast before they come to school and the ones who don't. Those who don't. For instance, those who don't have a balanced meal tend to be more aggressive. They tend to be the hardest kids to get along with, and they're the ones that throws the temper tantrums and things of that nature. Why that is? Well, we just went through some of the results. It may be because of their environment. The things that they are exposed to even before they get to school in the mornings. The things that they had to endure last night before they laid down. The things that they had to hear in the next room. Might be that mommy is a single parent, and maybe the mother is working one, two, or even possibly three jobs to hold things together. And there are many siblings in the house. You don't know what's going on in there. It's all chaotic, but sometimes they see going to school as a big turnoff because, hey, you know, it's a waste of their time. What am I going here for? Is it just a babysitting institution? Is it something to keep me off the streets? Or what is this about? They can't see that far down the road to see and understand that education is vital to their very existence. They don't know that. It's like going to a church and talking to people about the teachings of Jesus. They don't see that right now. They see coming to church as something to do, perhaps on Sunday. Everybody else is doing it, so we may as well do it too. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it takes everything that you have ever studied, everything that you have ever been exposed to. And again, even that may not be sufficient. But we have to just lay in there, hang in there, and just do it, because that's what our ministry is all about. This is why I'm talking about this stuff, because I'm compelled to do it. Homeless children is a hot button for me. I was never homeless as a child. I was never homeless in my upbringing, because I grew up in a household where I had my mom, I had my dad. You know, dad was a hardworking fellow. He was not no university professor or airplane pilot or nuclear physicist or anything of that nature. He was an orderly at a hospital. He wasn't the doctor. He wasn't the chief neurosurgeon. He was an orderly at a hospital. He wore the white pants and white shirt and all that kind of stuff. But when you came in an ambulance or something, he was the first one to greet you there and to roll you into the emergency room and to care for you. So consequently, he knew everything about everything that was going on in our community. Come home and make a detailed report to everyone. Well, you know, so-and-so came in last night, you know. But he was a good fellow. You know, he did the best he could with what he had. And my mother was a good, hard-working lady who worked all day in white folks' home, ironing shirts and cooking and all that sort of thing. And when she finished at the end of the day, she would come home and take care of her own family. And I grew up in that kind of environment, and until I stayed there, until they passed away. Of course, I lived a fruitful life. I was in church every Sunday morning. I was in church school, Sunday school, and you know, I enjoyed the benefits of knowing what the Sunday school convention was all about, what singing in the youth choir was all about, what being a part of the men's organization. I experienced all of that growing up. And so it was not anything new for me to come into, when I came into ministry, I didn't have to start from day one. So I try to pass these values on to those perhaps who did not have that kind of exposure. Because often they cannot see what you see. I had a bishop to tell me that one time, and talking about and I was pastoring a relatively small church. He told me, he said, Reverend Gibbs, they don't see what you see. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, the things that you envision are from your perspective, and they're relevant to your experiences, your reading, your exposure, your travels, people you know, people you talk to. Everything that you've ever done makes up you. And when you talk about something out there that you're trying to explain to someone, they don't see it. You see it, but they don't see it. And so it then becomes your responsibility to teach them the right way. We had a meeting this morning. It was a very fruitful meeting with young people, with the youth department of my church. And I think we did pretty well. I wanted to meet with them and to listen to them, listen to their heartbeat, to hear some of the things that they had to say that were important, because the biggest problem that they had was that no one listened to them. No one had ever listened to them. I was, okay, so we listened to some of the concerns that they had, and they're very interesting. I found that they were very intelligent kids, very intelligent. When you see them in a church setting, they're normally sitting there with their head down, like, boy, I'll be glad when this is over. But they are thinking. And so now what I'm trying to do is get inside of their heads and so I can see what they see. I guess it's something worth mentioning. It was all in all, I think it was very productive. 888-627-6008. Call me, please. Toll free. 888-627-6008. Email is jimrgibbs@comcast.net. The website, it's always in lowercase, www.nsceinc.org. Once again, www.nsceinc.org. I have really enjoyed this 5 weeks of just going on and on and on, and I suppose it would be difficult for anyone to just sit down without any notes or without anything in front of them. The only thing I have in front of me are the toll-free numbers, and I have my little script as far as the five pillars of my organization and the name of the organization and so on and so forth, and I recognize my partners, and that's about it. Everything else comes from pretty much off the top of my head. It's not particularly easy, but I'm grateful that these things come to me, and that I can't. You want to tell me what that is?
Potential guest to email you.
Okay, the wife has mentioned again. Tell us what you tell us.
Now, there were some potential guests that emailed on last week. It would be nice if you would call, at least one of you. We're waiting to hear from you.
Thank you, baby. She's so sweet. Yeah, I got a slew of potential guests, and I sat down and very methodically responded to each and every one of them and encouraged them to call in and so on. Ain't heard nothing. So we hope maybe it's the wrong time zone for someone living in Sweden. I don't know what time zone they're in. They may be in the bed asleep. You know, or someone living in Russia, or someone said on their response, if you could speak Russian, I would appreciate it. I said, okay, you know, I don't speak Russian, so you will need to find someone who can help you to interpret what I'm saying. Can you understand what's coming out of my mouth? No, I couldn't resist that. That was Chris Tucker, you know. But I do thank all of you for your responses. I thank you for your notes of encouragement. And we're going to be, as I speak with management on BBS, they're going to assist me in trying to locate a more appropriate time, perhaps through the week, because it's very taxing for me as a pastor to try to engage this program on a Saturday afternoon. We have a lot of obligations in the church. We have to go throughout the community and visit members. I've got one lady that had a pacemaker, heart transplant, whatever. I have to go see her. I have people that I'm on hold that I have not seen. One lady had a broken foot. She had to have a foot replaced or something? She had screws put in the thing.
Broke her ankle.
And so I'll need to see her. And others that I have sort of neglected because the best time to see them is on a Saturday afternoon. You know, tomorrow being the first Sunday, you want to make sure that you can get around to seeing these folk on Saturday afternoon. Now, it's getting close to our time, so let me just say a word before we close out. I do want to thank the brothers Doug and Don? And the others at the radio station, the owners, for their indulgence, for bringing me in and for giving me this opportunity. Now, I hope that they will be able to assist me and help me with their expertise in locating a better time slot where I can get this positive feedback from the audience. Maybe what I said was true. Maybe they are asleep at this time. Because Sweden is on the other side of the globe. I mean, it might very well be that it's 3-4 o'clock in the morning over there. And most people are asleep. So if I'm hitting you at the wrong time, charge it to my head and not my heart. Father, we thank you for our coming together tonight. We thank you for these thy people who have given their support, and those who may be listening, we thank you for the potential guest that sent me a note through the email. We pray that you will bless those notes as they come in, that one day we might be able to communicate with one another, that we can all become a big fellowship. And also for those young people, those persons who are in the middle schools, the high schools, the colleges, the community colleges, that are themselves being victimized by through bullying, victimized by, as my wife said last week, someone who wants to wear her watch. That one day that you will rise up and say, enough. I'm not going to give you my watch. This is my watch. My mom bought me this watch, or my dad bought me this watch, and it's for me and me only. That you will rise to the occasion, because bullies don't stay long. They come like a thief in the night, and they want to prey upon you, but you just hold fast. You just stand up, and one day you can rise up against them. We thank you so much. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.